This is a Charles Russell Speechleys podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Charles Russell Speechleys podcast on operational resilience. I'm Chris Ingram. I'm a senior associate in the commercial team at Charles Russell Speechleys, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Mark Bailey and Christina Fleming. So, Mark, Christina, would you like to just introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Mark Bailey. I'm head of the technology and commercial group at Charles Russell Speechleys. I am a technology infrastructure lawyer, so specialising in data centres and IT services and technology infrastructure.
Hi, I'm Christina Fleming. I'm a lawyer in the commercial and technology team here at Charles Russell Speechleys, and I have a particular focus on fintech.
Great, thank you both. I think I'll just set the scene. Obviously, COVID-19 has tested pretty much every business and every business's continuity strategy over the last few months or so. And operationally, I think we've seen that financial services has coped pretty well overall with the pandemic. And as a sector, it's obviously had to develop resilience and learn the lessons from the crisis in 2008. And it's had to account for the regulatory initiatives, so particularly around outsourcing, supply chain and operational resilience. So today, we're just going to explore what's been going on in financial services and have a look at the lessons that other sectors might be able to learn from the financial services operational resilience agenda. So let's kick things off. Christina, if we start with you, could you just give us a quick overview of what operational resilience is and what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. So operational resilience is essentially the ability of firms and the financial sector as a whole to prevent, adapt, respond to, and recover from operational disruptions. Operational disruption or the unavailability of an important business service is seen to have the potential to cause wide-reaching harm to consumers and market integrity and cause general instability in the financial system as a whole. So I think previously it was fair to say that the focus was maybe on trying to prevent cyber attacks, data breaches, or third-party service failures. Whereas now I think most people, indeed including the regulators, accept that these kind of events are bound to happen. And the new operational resilience agenda is sort of trying to shake things up and focus on protecting the continuity and supply of financial services and products that people use and that the wider economy relies on most. So the overall message from the package of consultation papers published in December, and that was by the Bank of England, the PRA and the FCA, was that they wanted to implement a stronger regulatory framework to promote greater operational resilience of regulated firms and the financial market as a whole. So they sought to add a bit more colour with more practical examples as to what operational resilience really means in practice. And they highlighted that for many organisations, actually addressing operational resilience could require significant cultural change and maybe bring together previously siloed parts of the business to sort of speak what they call a common new language of operational resilience. And I think this is consistent with similar approaches to, for example, data protection and GDPR compliance and other frameworks from a regulatory perspective, which are adopting a sort of outcomes-based approach. So people are coining the phrase operational resilience by design.
Thanks, Christina. That's a very helpful introduction. As you said, we move very much into an outcome-based world here. And the regulators are very clear that the result of the implementation of operational resilience should be that when a disruption occurs, not if, firms would have a robust arrangement in place to deal with it. That obviously leads to a lot of common sense planning. And the key for a lot of this is planning and rehearsal and repetition. So the arrangements should be tested, and also firms should be able to demonstrate that they are operationally resilient, both to themselves and to any of their supervisors, including their regulators. The FCA summarised that the proposals were designed to promote stronger and more effective governance of operational resilience and more organisation and cooperation between parties. Obviously, that is financial services sector specific, to a degree, and a lot of what we're talking about today is the promotion of this good practice, much of which already exists within businesses from a technology and operational point of view. but given a higher sector priority. And we think that is an important message because it promotes board awareness and board sponsorship, as well as the wider cultural change that Christina mentioned. But obviously, there will be a number of models that will respond to give businesses frameworks that are already available, whether those models are based around a COVID-type situation where respond is the immediate opportunity, triggering the plans, then adapting according to those circumstances, making the contingency plans, bringing the disaster recovery plans into operation, moving through to recovery, and then most importantly, after that, lessons learned and improvements of business processes, plugging gaps and seeking for the same not to happen again. So those concepts of respond, adapt, recover, or similar models that the consultants will have will be very much part of our stronger language against this wider concept of resilience by design, which will require organisations to adapt culturally.
Thanks, Mark. And within that, how specific are the requirements? I mean, how prescriptive are they being?
So I think maybe just if it'd be helpful if I sort of gave a broad overview of the kind of requirements that are coming out from the operational resilience agenda. I think both the PRA and the FCA have adopted a similar approach to what this means. So firstly, you have to identify your important business services. So this is a service where disruption to the provision of that service could cause harm to consumers or market participants or affect the financial stability as a whole. And this is for firms to decide. So the regulators aren't going to provide detailed guidance on this. Next is to set impact tolerances for each of these services. So thresholds for maximum tolerable disruption or outage duration. And then mapping, so identifying the documents and relevant processes, technologies or information, which is key to delivery of these business services. And then scenario testing, so testing the impact tolerances against what they've described as severe but plausible scenarios. So COVID-19 would be a good example of what, you know, we might have thought of as being quite severe, but it is plausible that such a pandemic could occur. And then preparing and regularly updating self-assessment compliance, and finally defining robust governance frameworks to actually oversee the implementation of operation resilience.
Thanks, Christina. So it's obviously fairly well developed in terms of financial services. But moving on to other sectors that we work in, that listeners might be working in, are there any key themes that can be drawn out that we could apply to the non-financial services contexts?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right, Chris. Every business is technology enabled these days, and many businesses would simply just describe themselves as technology businesses, even if their primary sector is not technology. So it's very important to put this into the wider discussion around digital transformation and as to how businesses are adapting to the cloud, adopting more dispersed models of computing, and looking out towards concentrating again on their core business functions and allowing IT services providers to do the operational stuff. But I think what COVID and these papers probably both emphasize is the absolutely fundamental importance on operational resilience of people. Operational resilience is not just about having a good data protection policy, a good ISO 27001 information security policy and lots of papers and procedures. It's about the wider governance around that. Where financial services goes further is the governance for the whole sector, but the businesses can adapt some of those learnings into their own organisation. So we see the cultural change here being very important. A move from no failure permitted to failure is inevitable to plan to recover, but also the fundamental importance of having good quality board representation. Cyber has been a board level responsibility for a number of years now, but the whole agenda is more important now from that perspective at an operational resilience level. And fundamentally, businesses who have non-executive directors or executive boards will have to find operational managers who are familiar with this agenda, who can boost their technological capability and understanding more generally. That then has to flow through the business. And as we said, systems resilience is no good if the people are not resilient, And clearly COVID has tested many of us to our limits very strongly. Can we work at home? Are we able to work at home if we are isolating or there are pandemic implications and a large proportion of the workforce are unable to work? What would happen in those circumstances simply around our physical and mental health? I think are just as important as making sure that the systems are still working and that the legal and technology compliance frameworks are in place.
I think if I also perhaps pick up on what this means for outsourcing and sort of chain outsourcing supply agreements. One of the main headlines coming out of the consultation papers was that the regulators had identified several concerns around the use of third-party suppliers and what they sort of described as a lack of awareness around what is outsourced. They're not proposing to make any changes to the existing rules and guidance they have on outsourcing or third-party service provision. And this is and there's also the guidance we have from the EBA on cloud outsourcing. And then if you look at the backdrop we have to the GDPR and the requirements around data processing and putting important data processing clauses in contracts, this all creates a sort of flavour as to the kind of things that need to be in outsourcing contracts. So picking up some of these themes from the existing guidance, this is things like access and audit rights, provisions dealing with data security and security of systems. So, for example, a requirement for an agreement in writing with the cloud service provider, which sets out appropriate levels of data protection or continuity of services outsourced. And as I mentioned, provisions controlling subcontracting and chain outsourcing. So particularly in cloud contracts, there should be an obligation for the cloud service provider to approve material subcontractors or notify of any changes. And then also provisions dealing with disaster recovery and exit strategies. So while there aren't any additional contractual requirements, there will be an increased obligation on sort of firms to act as an intelligent consumer. So if you're a supplier to this sector, you may have more rigorous sort of vendor assessment processes or due diligence occurring. And the message from all of this is that good governance in outsourcing arrangements is key. They would test disaster recovery plans, exit plans which set out transitional assistance arrangements. And there may be a clause, for example, which allow the firm to request that a service provider provides assistance and support to effect an orderly transfer of services back in-house or to another supplier on termination of the agreement.
Thanks, Christina. That's a very helpful analysis of the supply chain and outsourcing and also the contractual provisions. Clearly, many of those are common sense and they need to be tailored to the appropriate circumstances of the individual contracts. We are seeing, though, that the emphasis on service levels is going to be absolutely fundamental to this, as that obviously is the key outcome of many contracts, and that those service levels will need to be continuously reviewed and kept up to date. Fundamentally, that means that the management of the suppliers is continuous and effective, and there's certainly emerging evidence in the COVID-19 crisis that is around us at the moment, that businesses with very carefully constructed business continuity and disaster recovery plans clearly expect their suppliers to be able to respond in the event that their plan is triggered. But where the crisis is as pervasive as it has been with us at the moment, many suppliers will have many customers to sort out, many customers to help.
And therefore, their customers' priorities may all be very different.
So those practical steps, again, just need to be managed much more clearly in the contracts and then testing those plans regularly, adapting and moving forward, and also just being honest with those assessments as well. We see that as being one of the absolute fundamental behavioural changes, and we'll have to again look at whether contractual governance provisions are adequate for that and to refocus in all service provision on that particular aspect, as well as then keeping books and records. The next thing I think we see, which is I think a key theme for many suppliers, is that their procurement processes may well require a fairly strong overhaul or review because of this. The financial services regime requires outsourcing registers open to the regulator to be kept, but the guidance they give on pre-contract analysis, risk analysis on outsourcing,
and the manner in which suppliers can be managed in a complex supply chain seem to us to be essential parts of the guidance that would be relevant for all other sectors.
So, Mark, are you seeing suppliers being proactive with this? Or is it a question of being reactive to your customers' requests as they come in?
That's a good question, Chris. Thank you. I think certainly we're seeing the hyperscale providers, for example, putting out blogs and good visions as to how they will comply with these regulatory obligations. There is also, I think, a significant amount of
trade association attention on operational resilience.
With smaller and medium-sized suppliers, it's fair to say that the interest, I think, has been surprisingly a little low. We do think there is a way to go for suppliers, but the papers from the financial services regulator make it absolutely clear that legacy systems will be under review. There's going to be a fairly strong degree of technological change driven by this, and therefore it fits within the wider digital transformation agenda. And therefore we see, in many cases, this is an opportunity for suppliers to refresh their thinking, but also to have possible sales opportunities into larger corporates and customers who are taking this agenda seriously.
Thanks, Mark. So we've mentioned COVID, and it's pretty hard not to talk about what's going on in the world at the moment. So looking at things in that context, and perhaps going to Christina with this one, what lessons do you think that we can learn from recent events?
So I guess tying into the theme of cultural change at board level, I think it's more important than ever for businesses to have tech-savvy expertise at board level. And as a result of COVID-19, everyone is suggesting that those businesses with a strong digital offering are likely to be the ones that grow market share coming out of this. And we're seeing more products and services being sold digitally and online than ever before. So I think going forward, we're set to see an acceleration of digital transformation projects as firms, you know, look to increase their online offering, which will only bring with it, you know, an increased requirement for that board level tech expertise. But sort of, I guess, tied into this is also the consideration that there may be, to some extent, in some firms, a shortage of people who have the necessary expertise. And it's likely that there'll be more than just a requirement for a key technology officer, but everyone within a firm or on the board must have some level of digital expertise or generally be more digitally aware.
I think it's fair to say, though, that we're still very much in the middle of this current epidemic. And so our lessons learned may be premature in some sense, apart from one, I think, action that we're certainly going to see is that we're going to have to conduct some lessons learned exercises once we're a bit further out of this. Obviously, continuous reassessment is going to be necessary. So we're not looking just to go back to what we did before. So what are we doing now? What's going to happen to us next as we see the government making tentative steps to open the environment? And then what happens once we're out of the crisis? Those phases will need to be mapped. Are we going back to the same thing? So are we going to have as many face-to-face meetings? What's our business travel policy? Are we going to continue to invest in digital? Do we need to review our contracts with key suppliers? Are all going to be absolutely fundamental. The next point, I think, finally on that is just to review business continuity and disaster recovery. Those severe but plausible events, which Christina mentioned, the category may well have been extended. Obviously, from a critical national infrastructure point of view, many sectors are regulated, and the existential crises there are still climate change, which we mustn't forget. And then, absolutely fundamentally, what happens if we just lose power? Fundamentally, we're investing in a digital infrastructure at the moment, but that is all reliant on data centers and the continuation of power. So are those power sources secure? Do we need a renewable strategy or a green strategy which would support both power and energy and also that climate change agenda? Can we make this a socially responsible change as well? Other things, just the practicalities. As we move to home working, do you still need to have a disaster recovery location which you default to in a crisis? Do you review those types of policies? Will all be issues that I think the sheer breadth of COVID has got us working to think on.
Yeah, and I would also say, just picking up again on the theme of supply chain management, I think COVID has been a great example of the importance of supply chain management and awareness of what exactly is going on in your supply chain. Because I think the pandemic, you know, has hit customers and suppliers from all different angles and in different ways. So there's a clear benefit for firms to understand what their services are and then also understand the key suppliers that are feeding into that. I think the regulators have highlighted that even in the short term, there's a key focus on proper management of third-party services and crucial for firms to be undertaking proper vendor assessment and management, as well as ensuring that functions responsible for procurement are adequately resourced and everybody's trained in the importance of sort of vendor due diligence and good governance in contracts. I think so everyone needs to ensure that appropriate contractual protections are in place, but not just in place, but also tested and used in practice.
I can see also that that will extend into more extensive use of cloud and outsourcing potentially, but being aware potentially of some of the bigger risks involved in that. The regulators have given a fairly strong embrace to cloud over the last couple of years, but it's fair to say that in the lobbying on some of the outsourcing guidelines over the last year or so, the larger cloud providers have not been met with universal open arms in terms of their contractual strategies, limitations of liability, or their willingness, I think, to step strongly within the regulatory regime. So it will be interesting to see how the contractual models will evolve around that, and therefore whether, in fact, the focus will fall more on business continuity, what happens if suppliers fail, and then also, more importantly, insurance, where many insurance policies at the moment have not responded to COVID, and therefore the analysis of what the business's insurance strategy will be for loss of business and business disruption alongside all these operational requirements will perhaps be one of the very much stronger requirements that the industry as a whole will have to respond to.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Christina. I think we're pretty much out of time, so let's leave it there. Obviously a topic we've focused on in our team now for a while, but really, really interesting to see how it's come to the fore in the past few months and how different businesses and different sectors can learn from each other on this. Just a final note, if you're interested to hear more, please do get in touch with us. We've got a number of resources on our website, so please do check them out or drop us a line if you'd like us to send anything to you. I think we'll leave it there. So thanks, everyone, and I hope you found the pod helpful.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.